Chris, good morning to
Morning.
So here's a version of a Dogen saying, quite a famous one. I say it's a version because, of course, it's been translated from the Japanese, and you get various different translations of it. Anyway, he was the guy who brought Zen Buddhism from China to Japan. Think in the 9th century, but I'm not absolutely sure about that. So don't quote me on that, but something like that. Or it might have been the 10th century, I'm not sure. Anyway, so he was a Japanese guy who visited China and studied Chan, what's called Chan Buddhism in China, and brought it back, and he became the first Japanese patriarch of Soto Zen. There's lots of different types of Zen Buddhism, actually, but his school is known as Soto Zen. And this is one of his sayings, or a version of one of his sayings. Actually, interesting enough, he's a very kind of, he's quite a difficult person to understand, really, and he's known for a very kind of poetic way of talking, even a kind of deconstruction of language in a way. Anyway, we'll leave that. Don't worry about that. So this is what it says. To follow the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be illuminated by the myriad of things. To be illuminated by the myriad of things is to move beyond any idea of attainment. Move beyond any idea of attainment is to study the way. So it's kind of seeing that the influence of sort of Taoist or Taoist philosophy coming into Buddhism, even it's calling it the way. This is very much just a kind of Taoist way of talking about the path, the way, and it does imply this. We've been talking quite a bit about alignment, haven't we? We've been using the, in a way, the posture, a metaphor for alignment. By metaphor, I just mean a kind of a poetics of alignment, you know. So obviously, we can't necessarily align ourselves physically perfectly with the energetics of the world, as it were. But we have that as a kind of idea, yeah, or image, let's call it an image. When we sit, we try and have an image that what we're doing is aligning ourselves with, well, what's being called here, the way, this idea that there's a basic dynamics in the world, a basic kind of harmony in the world. And we're trying to align ourselves with that, yeah. Because it's of the world, it's also of us, yeah. There's a basic harmony that we can achieve, which you could say is just a sort of coming into a more fully our own nature. I'm reminded of Plotinus, who said that, you know, the beautiful is when something follows its own nature. Yeah, you know, something is beautiful when it follows its inner nature. And he talks about ugliness is when something deviates from its true nature. Yeah. It's this sort of idea in a way. And he says to follow the way is to study the self. Yeah. So again, it's making this correlation between us as a microcosm of the macrocosm. Yeah, when we look deeply into ourselves, we experience everything in a way. Because we're kind of a fractal microcosm of everything. You could say this about everything, yeah. It's like Indra's net, isn't it? This idea that every facet reflects every other facet of the world or of reality. Yeah. So we don't have to, in a way, look for it outside of ourselves. We can look for it within ourselves. Because that is what we might call in the Western tradition a sort of hermeneutic relationship. As below, so above. Yeah. And even more kind of mysteriously, in a way, when we affect any sort of change on one level, so when we change ourselves, this also corresponds to a change in everything else. Because this is quite mysterious and you can't really pin it down, but this idea that everything is affects everything else on all levels, you know, from the individual to the cosmic, as it were. And of course, we're affected the other way around as well. Right, so to follow the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. So what does he mean here? Well, this is my interpretation in a way. I don't really know what he means, but we're given I think, making a distinction between what we've already come across this, haven't we? This idea of a small self or contracted self and a big self, yeah, an open self that's kind of takes in everything. So when he says is to forget the self, is to forget our self, our contracted or small self. So when we really start to turn towards, what we find is a kind of energetics of being which exists on a much deeper fundamental level than our thoughts or our self-concerns. In particular, I'm reminded of that Rumi poem, you know, lovely Rumi poem, out beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there's a field. So when we kind of look into ourselves in this way, turn towards ourselves fully, we enter a non-judgmental space, as it were, the space of ourselves, yeah, the actual being of ourselves is naturally kind of free from all this dualistic good bad business. Yeah, I think this is quite pertinent to us as meditators, because I think a lot of people that meditate spend a lot of time wondering if they're doing it right or wrong, or they spend a lot of time thinking about themselves in this rather contracted way, which is a kind of conceptualization of the self rather than a felt sense of the self. Yeah. One of the reasons we're emphasizing turning towards the body is that the body, in a way, is in a sense comfortable in the world. It doesn't mean that you might not experience pain or discomfort. I don't mean it in that way, but it is part of the world. It's manifestly and obviously part of the world, isn't it? When we see other people, we recognize this. See other people walking around, you know, in our part of the world, in the same way as everything, like trees or rocks or anything else, animals, a part of the world. We're all part of the world, aren't we? When we turn towards ourselves in the sense of our felt experience, our direct experience, we're part of the world, yeah. When we are paying attention less to our conceptualizations about the world and more to our felt or sense experience, our direct experience of the world, it sort of goes below or beyond our judgmental mind. You know, we're no longer sitting there thinking whether we're good or bad or all these kind of judgments, and we're just experiencing things. So you're just experiencing sound arising in your mind, visual, that the five senses, and also just the inner experience of your own energetic being. I think this is one of the biggest mistakes about meditation, is this idea that we're trying to control or manipulate our conceptual mind. Our conceptual mind is by its very nature about control and manipulation. I don't mean manipulation in a negative sense. I just mean acting in the world. Yeah. What our conceptual mind does by basically seeing things as separate, it allows us to act in the world in some very interesting, useful, artistic, creative ways. Yeah? It's not a negative thing, but it's not what we're trying to do when we meditate. We're not trying to manipulate the world when we meditate. This is kind of expressed quite directly through the basic posture, the essential elements of meditation, which on its simplest level, its most fundamental level, it's just the sitting still, isn't it? We physically stop acting in the world in a way. We're not trying to impress our opinion or ourselves upon the world. Yeah. So this is a kind of, particularly for, I think, people in the modern world, this is a necessary rebalancing of something. Yeah, we've moved increasingly into this idea that we should dominate and manipulate the world. And of course, this has brought us to wherever we are in our kind of Earth history, our planetary history, our impact as a species on the planet, our impact on the planet has been one of mastery, isn't it? And manipulation, which is beginning to bite back, as it were. Because of course, this mastery is quite superficial. Yeah, it's the deeper consequences is that the harmony of the world is disrupted, isn't it? Yeah. There needs to be a kind of balance. So one of the things we're doing in meditation is just emphasizing a different way of being in the world, a different possibility. It's not necessarily saying then therefore you should never act in the world, but it's saying that in order to act in the world in a positive way, you first have to have a kind of deep appreciation and love for the world. Yeah, if you don't have a deep appreciation and love for the world, which comes to us through our felt senses, perhaps particularly our sense of beauty in a way, the beauty of the world, that the world offers itself to us in all its kind of vitality and beauty, and an appreciation of the world in this way. If we don't have this appreciation in the world, of course, the world, in a sense, becomes a dead world, which is just available to us to use. Yeah, and we're beginning now. We're beginning to really get a sense of the consequences of this attitude towards the world. And of course, if we have this attitude towards the world, it tends to also extend towards ourselves as well. We start seeing ourselves in a kind of mechanical, functional way, as if ourselves, as if our body, as if our kind of physical manifestation has nothing to do with consciousness, as if consciousness isn't actually a saturation of the material world. You know, the material world is saturated by consciousness. They're not separate things. Yeah. Form and emptiness, isn't it? They're dependent upon one another and indistinguishable from one another. But when we render the world as dead or soulless or lacking psyche, lacking spirit, lacking, we can use these different words, lacking divinity, if you like. It becomes something just to be manipulated. And our own bodies have become in this, aren't they? Well, we see our bodies in this way. We don't, very often people don't really feel embodied. They think that their self is some free-floating sort of psychic entity. And the body is a kind of husk. Anyway, so one of the things we're trying to do when we meditate is to have a deeper appreciation for life, our own life, but also the life of the world in general, because these two are not discontinuous from each other. You can't really have one without the other. Anyway, to study the self is to forget the self. So in my interpretation of this, he's saying we're forgetting ourselves as something separate and discrete. Yeah. Or something that's ruled by our views or ideas, our preferences, our cravings, really. Yeah. And he says to forget the self is to be illuminated by the myriad of things. This is right at the very core of Dogen's teachings. And it's also, I think, deeply reflected on the Buddha's answer to Mara when he's becoming enlightened under the Bodhi tree, as you all know, is attacked by the forces of Mara, isn't it? And his response to this is initially just to pervade Mara's host with unconditional love. And in the last bit of that story, Mara challenges him conceptually about his right to sit under the Bodhi tree or the axis mundi, the very axis of the universe. He replies by tapping the earth, doesn't he, and summoning the earth goddess, the divinity of the earth, to testify to his right. This is quite an interesting, very interesting symbolic image. And I would suggest this is the same of what Dogen means when he says to be illuminated by the myriad of things. So we call to witness the whole world. Yeah. Our existence is confirmed by all existence. Yeah. Not because we're independent and separate, but because we're part of everything else. When Dogen talks about meditation, he talks in a very poetic way. There's something in his teachings that's had a huge effect on my own feeling. I wouldn't say understanding of meditation, my own felt sense of what it is to meditate, is that he has this idea that you're arising in every moment is intimately and deeply connecting of the arising of everything else in that moment. Sounds a bit abstract, doesn't it? But your arising is not discontinuous from everything else arising. So in this way of thinking, or in this way of feeling, or this way of imagining, when we meditate with everything else in that precise moment. So we meditate with the mountains and the rivers and the insects and the birds and the animals, the plants and everything else. In that moment, we're sitting with everything. And this sitting with everything, of course, takes us out of our small self into a kind of cosmic self. Yeah, that we are looked upon or supported, witnessed by the whole world. And of course, we're witnessing the whole world. Yeah? So it's a reciprocal. The earth recognizes us and we recognize the earth in medicine. It sounds a bit abstract, but in a way it's a very simple thing that we're remembering, or we're keeping our senses, both our five senses and our normal senses, but perhaps more importantly, our heart. We're keeping our heart sense open to everything else. Called in Buddhism, of course, the Mahayana, isn't it? The great way, as opposed to the small way where we're perhaps over-concerned with our own attainment. We practice the great way where we are meditating with and for everything. And this is the Bodhisattva path, isn't it? The Dogen here is talking about the Bodhisattva path. To be meditating for everything, we have to have some awareness of everything. Of course, we can't have a conceptual awareness of everything because our conceptual awareness is very, very limited. We can only consciously process a very small amount of information at any one time, yeah? If you're a man, it's even less. Anyway, that was a joke. So we can't consciously be aware of the whole world. So this is suggesting something else. It's suggesting there's a different type of awareness from our conceptual awareness. And this different type of awareness, which is distinctive from our conceptual awareness, is associated with the heart rather than with the brain or the frontal lobes or whatever. Of course, don't take any of this literally, because that this awareness really is throughout our whole being. It's part of our being, a part of beingness is awareness. Yeah. And what we're part of a field of awareness. We think of awareness as, I think very often we think of awareness as our awareness. But I think this is a mistake. Yeah, we're participating in a kind of field of awareness. We're kind of a node within a field of awareness, or a knot within a rug, you know. And we participate in the whole field of awareness. You know? In the Rumi poem, we get, you know, beyond ideas of right doing and wrongdoing, there is a field, I meet you there. When the soul lays down in that grass, the world is too full to speak of. Yeah. So we get this idea that we're allowing ourselves to kind of merge or relax into some far greater holding, something that holds us. The whole universe holds us. Just as the Buddha touched the earth and the goddess, the divinity of the earth, supported him. We're trying to do the same thing when we meditate. We're trying to rest in what we might call the weave or the field of awareness. And this awareness is not other than the material world. As I said, the material world is saturated with awareness or mind, you know, or emptiness in Buddhism. You know. These two are constantly interacting. It's very interesting, though, maybe a little bit irrelevant, that this is actually the world that quantum physics seems to be revealing to us. Yeah. Dogen, along with other Buddhist scholars like Nagarjuna, seem to have hit upon this idea that quantum physics is now affirming that everything is granular. Yeah. So a moment of time. I don't know if we should even go here now. A moment of time is in some sense discontinuous from the past and the future. It's not a steady flow, but it's a granular time, like light or space or everything else is in like little packets. Yeah, this is what a quantum means, isn't it? Quantum is a little packet or something. And this applies to everything. So within that particular quantum or that particular moment, that particular pulse of the sort of heartbeat of the cosmos, everything is present, past, present and future, all there in that moment. Everything is there in that moment. Awesome. I hope this doesn't sound too abstract, because actually there's a way of opening the heart consciousness that allows us to sit fully supported by the world. We get this in Islamic mysticism as well. There's a quality of the heart known as himma, which is a quality of the heart as a perceptual organ to allow the divine in. Yeah. I'm using the word divine. I mean, I'm not using it in a theistic sense, really. But just trying to get at some the quality of the world as alive. Yeah, everything is alive. Everything has its own awareness. In the Zen tradition, even rocks have awareness. Everything has awareness. Everything has what we can call, in the broadest sense, mind, yeah, or formlessness. Form, all form also participates in this. So when we meditate, we sit with everything. In every moment we sit with everything. So this is to be illuminated by the myriad of things, yeah, to allow them to be reflected in the dual center of the heart, yeah, our own little facet of Indra's net that reflects everything else in the universe, everything else in existence. Is also arising in our hearts. Of course, we can't know this consciously, but we can kind of practice. What we're practicing when we meditate is a kind of deep relaxation. It's not relaxation in our normal understanding of relaxation. Our normal understanding of relaxation is distraction, isn't it? I'm not criticizing this. We all need a bit of distraction sometimes, but we tend to think of relaxation as distracting ourselves. We watch a box set or we do whatever we do, yeah. So it's not that type of relaxation. It's a different type of relaxation where we're ultimately trying to suspend the activity of our separateness, yeah, of our small mind, to study the self is to forget the self. We're trying to forget the self completely and be supported by everything, yeah, to be supported by the myriad of things, yeah, the trees, the room you're sitting in, the trees outside. Everything, the sky, the earth, everything supports us. So this is the gesture, this is the basic gesture of alignment, isn't it? When we're aligned, we're supported by everything. We've been talking about alignment as a physical thing, which of course it is, but that's only one level that alignment kind of exists on, much in a much more in a much deeper sense, in a more significant sense. Alignment is a psychic alignment with reality, yeah? That our consciousness is part of a field of consciousness, just as our material being is part of a material world, yeah? And this is what we're trying to relax into. We're trying to relax into this field. When the soul lays down in that grass, the world is too full to speak of. Ideas, language, even the notion, one another, makes no sense. So even the notion of one another makes no sense. So we cease to be individual in a sense. This is why the Buddha can call the earth the witness. All of this, so then he says, to be illuminated by the myriad of things is to go beyond any idea of attainment. So we've let go completely at this point, haven't we? We've let go of any idea of our own individual attainment, recognizing that actually what we seek is just always present, yeah, in that moment of deep relaxation, everything is present. There's nothing to be attained. It's just this presence. Yeah. That you're present with everything else. Well, I suppose the question arises, well, how do we approach this such a state? You know, how do we move towards such a state? Well, the interesting thing is that it's actually very simple, although it might take a lot of patience and a lot of practice, but it's quite simple. We just attend to our basic experience, trusting that our basic experience is beyond our small self, and in harmony with everything else. Yeah. I find myself, maybe because of my own well, anyway, that doesn't matter. I find myself kind of quite often not being feeling dissatisfied with this, how we quite often express, how Buddhism quite often expresses the goal, if you like, to see things as they really are. I don't think that's quite right. Seeing kind of implies a kind of distance from things. I think we'd be better off to say, to feel things as they really are, or just to experience things as they really are, not to see them, which somehow implies there's a kind of, it's outside of us, and it's somehow a kind of intellectual penetration. Actually, all we're being asked to do as meditators is to attend carefully and lovingly to our own experience, and trusting that our own experience is actually the experience of things as they really are. But our own experience, because we have such a fantastic mind, our own experience isn't our own experience, really. It's the experience of everything. Yeah. I can't really express this in adequately, but at some point when you realize, deeply realize, because we all know this on some kind of intellectual level, but when you realize that everything that you've ever experienced, it arises within your awareness, then you realize your awareness is not different from the world itself. You know? So when we meditate, we're just allowing everything to arise in our awareness. We're just, in Rumi's word, we're just allowing ourselves to lay down in the grass of reality itself. Yeah. So it sounds very sort of grandiose, perhaps, but actually it's very simple. We're just simply attending carefully with care. So this word care is quite nice, isn't it? Well, it has an emotional warmth when we care for something, we love something, but it also has the idea of taking care, being careful, being attentive, not being absent-minded, but being attentive. So we try and attend or abide with ourselves with a sense of care. We're careful in both senses of that word. All of this from Soto Zen perspective, or I think just from a Buddhist perspective, actually, all of this, as we've already mentioned, is actually simply manifest through the posture. It doesn't mean you have to have some kind of perfect posture, or you have to be able to sit perfectly still. It doesn't mean this. It means a kind of the attitude. We express the attitude through the posture. We try and express our love for the world through the way we sit in the world. We shouldn't be surprised at this, because this is probably more important than any of the writings or the scriptures of Buddhism. Has just been this very simple image, isn't it, of a meditating figure. If you say to most people, if you say Buddhism to most people, what will come to mind is this image of a human being sitting still, usually within a natural setting, within nature, you know. So this is essential, just as all spiritual traditions would tend to have a central iconic image. For Buddhism, this is our iconic image, isn't it? An icon is something that holds the divinity, you know, holds the spirit of something. You know. We won't go into the whole very interesting history of icons in the Western tradition, but anyway, you can say that this image holds everything. Yeah. And that the iconic image of Buddhism is of a meditating figure, isn't it? And that gives us, in a funny sense, that gives us all we need to know. Yeah. But we take up, we make ourselves into an icon, if you like. We perform this gesture of enlightenment through our physical body, which reflects an internal psychic posture as well, or attitude as well, yeah. The body expresses, fully expresses the heart of the practice. The heart is a sort of psychic element of the practice. Yeah. So all we're trying to do when we meditate really is to just attend carefully to our experience. Sounds a bit too simple, doesn't it? But I think it really is that simple. Unfortunately, this is quite difficult in there's many ways of understanding why it's difficult, but perhaps the simplest way is just to say it's difficult because many of us are too distracted. We don't have the samatha or calm to sit with, or we don't have the emotional positivity to stay with our experiences. We take our experiences personally, you know. If a difficult memory comes up or a difficult sensation comes up, there's too much, there's the small self is too present, so we take it personally. I thought of this, or I felt this. This is a bad thought, or this is a bad feeling. Therefore, I am a bad person. Yeah? Or this is a pleasant thought, or a wonderful thought. I'm a good person. Yeah? We make it. We haven't. When we do that, we haven't forgotten the self, have we? We make more self from our experience. We're trying to sit with ourselves without making more self. This is what he means when he says to study the self is to forget the self. Because when you really study yourself, you realize that none of it's personal, is it? It's elemental. We're elemental. We're no more or less elemental than a mountain or a tree or a cheetah. Yeah. We're elemental beings. By this, I mean we're made of the same basic stuff. The same basic stuff as everything else is made of. Obviously, on one level, it's these subatomic particles, these mysterious particles that seem to wink in and out of being itself, seem to have no real distinction between emptiness or form. Or, you know, more commonly, we in Buddhism, we use the elements, don't we? You know, earth, fire, earth, water, fire, air, space, consciousness. You know, we use the elements, but we don't have to take them literally, of course. They're just referring to the different qualities that make up things that exist. They all share these qualities of solidity or fluidity or warmth or spaciousness, yeah, and so on. Yeah, we're made up of these same elements. We're elemental. But instead of experiencing ourselves as elemental and therefore as deeply implicated in existence itself, we tend to experience ourselves as individual, discrete. Yeah. But when we meditate, and of course, well, anyway, I won't say that. But so when we meditate, we're trying to just relax into our elemental nature, our true nature, which is same as, you know, so when we're illuminated by it, and because it's the same as everything else, there's no attainment. Yeah, you know, there's no attainment because it is just what it is already. Yeah, you know, there's nothing to be attained. So we move beyond any ideas of attainment. Yeah. And to move beyond any ideas of attainment is to follow the way. So we've done a full kind of circle that we can do in every moment, which is not a static attainment. We can't attain this. We can just realize this in every moment to whatever degree we're able to do. We can't put it in the bank and keep it. It's either there in this moment or it's not there in this moment, isn't it? We've either shrunk and become entangled in our small self, or we relax and release into our big self. And of course, we oscillate, don't we? As meditators, as people, we oscillate. So we're trying to strengthen one side. Really, there's not really two sides, but this is how it appears to us, because we're still subject to this dualistic way of being in the world. Yeah. So meditation, we're trying to strengthen the other side. Yeah. We're not trying to strengthen our ego. This is kind of bad news for some of us, isn't it? That we kind of meditate because we want to be better. But from this perspective, there's no being better or being worse. There's just being. What we're trying to experience is the being bit, when we meditate. Of course, in other parts of our lives, we're interested in doing something. And that's very good as well. It's not a bad thing. Yeah. So when the Buddha attains enlightenment, he doesn't stop meditating, does he? He still meditates for the rest of his life because he still needs to have access to that way of being, that feeling of being. Yeah. He also spends a life, an active life, doesn't he? He becomes a Buddha not because he's enlightened. He becomes a Buddha because he teaches in the world, doesn't he? He spends the rest of his life trying to encourage others to follow this way. Yeah? So he's therefore known as the Buddha. So we're not against doing, quite the opposite, but we're trying to do on the foundation of having access to this experience of being, you know, being in harmony with everything else. Yeah. But leave it there, shall we? Let's do some meditation together. So let's just check in the timer for trouble these days. Okay, get yourselves set up nice, as comfortable as possible. Maybe take one or two deeper breaths in through the nose and out through the mouth. Make a bit of a sighing noise if it helps you. Relax a bit. Get down in the belly a little bit, yeah? Let's have a little bit of a sense of the unseen world. World beyond or below our normal consciousness. There's loads of bits of the world that are not directly perceivable by us, isn't it, through our normal senses, whether it's the subatomic world or whether it's the cosmic world, whether it's the microbiological world. We only experience a very limited amount of world, don't we, through our normal senses. But perhaps there's a feeling sense. We are, after all, made out of those atoms, those subatomic particles that are winking in and out of existence. Only come into being through coming into particular relationships with one another. We don't really have any substantial existence outside of relationship. Yeah. Of course, our bodies are made of all these microscopic biological entities. We're told that over 50% of our bodies are not human at all. Independent little creatures, if you want to call them this. Our worlds unto ourselves, aren't we? Atomic and biological worlds of unconceivable, ungraspable complexity, intricacy. Although we can't directly apprehend this, we can sort of open imaginatively to it, just on a felt level. Just allow your heart, mind to take in what you really are on these different levels, the deep biological level, the deep material. I don't even know whether we call it material, atomic or subatomic level. We live in a wonderful age, in a sense, don't we? That we've got this access to this knowledge, which of course is a way of imagining the way that the ancient Hindu and the ancient Buddhist and the ancient Chinese scriptures already started to imagine before they didn't have what we call a science of it. They already had a sense of it, a felt sense, which arose through the sort of practices that we do, this sitting meditative practice, which somehow allows us to experience things that are way beyond our normal rational apprehension. Let your legs relax if you can. You can come into dialogue. I think it's quite, I find myself as a meditator these days quite often just lightheartedly or playfully dialoguing with my own body. I might ask my legs if they would like to relax. Try and reassure them that it's okay. Let go. I remember the deep, broad earth below me. I think it's okay, isn't it, just to let go. Nothing terrible is going to happen. I ask my face. Faces are so interesting, aren't they? Our faces are so interesting as a meditator to soften. Your face is such a hugely helpful thing, just a really long-term project, isn't it? To really soften our faces, to really let go. In the face. What happens when we let go in our face? I think what happens is that feeling comes up into our face, doesn't it? We stop holding our face. When it softens, it becomes full of feeling, full of our feeling, full of our hearts. I'm going to use that term. This is what it feels like to be you, full of emotion. This is like coming back to our original face, which the full of awareness and emotion. You can ask your face, my darling face, just soften and relax. You don't have to put on a face for the world. Just let your face relax. Jaw, lips, temples, the scalp, ears and the nose. Particularly the mouth, nice soft mouth. Let the skin of your face breathe a bit, the skin of your scalp, back of your head. Remember your head as part of your body. We make this rather misleading idea, don't we? Heads and bodies, well, both heads are bodies, the part of bodies. Rather important part of our body and our head. So we're relaxing at both ends, aren't we? We're trying to relax our feet, our legs. And trying to relax our face, and we allow this have a sympathetic effect on the rest of the body. Whenever we relax any part of our body, we tend to have an effect on the whole body. Yeah. So relaxing our face will also encourage the rest of our body to relax. As we'll relax in our legs or feet, we encourage the face to relax. To relax is to become more intimate with ourselves, the kind of dropping in or softening into our being. Our breath is a critical experience because it's our basic experience of being in the world. Of course, we be in the world through our senses, more fundamentally through our breath. This is a literal physical connection with the world all the time, isn't it? We're breathing in the world. We think about we're just breathing the air, but of course the air is full of the molecules of everything around us, the trees, the bricks, everything. We're breathing in the world. Into the world of our own bodies, which is just as much the world as any other world, isn't it? But it's through the breath, we're really coming into a felt, by which we don't just mean a physical sensation, but felt in the sense of a heart connection, an emotional connection of our breath. We come into our total dependence upon. We're calling, you could even say breathing in and breathing out is another way of calling the earth to witness. And when you breathe in, even if you're in a city, I'm in London, but when I breathe in and out, I can also just remember the rivers and the mountains and the forests, the hills and the meadows, the cities and the villages. I can remember what makes up our world, the animals and the insects, the birds and the plants, the oceans and the fish. I don't mean think about it, because we can't really think about all these things, but we can breathe them all in. And certain images might just appear. Or just a certain feeling of being supported by everything. When we meditate, instead of feeling that life is a battle or a struggle, which of course it is sometimes, but when we meditate, we imagine being supported by the whole of life. Of course, it's not our small self, our ego self, that's supported. It's our deeper self. Our self, which isn't separate from everything else, that's supported. This is why it's a little bit hard, isn't it? Because this does not necessarily correlate with our ego aspirations or our ambitions or our desires. But it does correlate with something even deeper in us, which I think is this basic longing to belong, to be part of, to be recognized. So we breathe in, calling the earth to witness. And we breathe out, acknowledging. Breath also takes us down very naturally and simply to the heart area, lungs either side of the heart, supporting the heart, the wings of the heart on the lungs. The heart, perhaps best understood as meaning our whole circulatory system, the blood, the courses like a river, like little riverlet streams around the whole of our body, a whole continent, a whole ecosystem in itself, really, our bodies, aren't they? Supporting as they do myriad of life, largely unrecognized by us. My soft face, release your legs. Don't listen to what I'm saying, really. Don't be bothered by what I'm saying. Just images. Soften the hands. Softening the hands will help to the heart to rest comfortably. Just breathing in and out, opening and softening the body in the way suggested by your breath. Let your breath guide your awareness. Notice how the energy is moving in your body. Energy in the body moves quite quickly It's got these tides, these sort of rhythms. Actually, we can allow our awareness to sweep right through the body with every in-breath and every out-breath. See if you can feel into how the awareness wants to move, how the energy in the body wants to move. It's very dynamic, it's very flowing. You breathe in, the energy might move right from your toes, through your legs, up through your pelvis, up through your central, what we sometimes call the central channel, right up the torso to the crown of the head in one inhalation. With the exhalation, see how your energy moves. What direction does it move through your body? Let the energy be free. Let it move. Too complex, too intricate, too fast for the conceptual mind, but you can have a felt sense of the energy. It's flowing naturally, just as the breath flows naturally through you. So the energy in the body, the currents, different meridians, different energetic connections which are everywhere in the body. Awareness is everywhere in the body. Energy everywhere in the body. A body of muscle and tissue, bone and organ. Also on a deeper level, just the body of energy, flowing energy. The body comes into being with every breath. Comes into a slightly new dynamic. Refreshed, reimagined every moment. And just as your body comes into being with each breath, with each moment, the whole world, the room you sit in, your neighborhood, your country, your planet, comes into being in each moment. You and everything else coming into being each moment. Well, I've been thinking about this. See if you can just feel it. What does it feel like to be alive? To participate in the cosmos, in the universe, in the world. form and formlessness mingle. Sky and the earth, heaven and earth mingle. Naturally. What's required is a non-effort. Sometimes we just call this love, don't we? Because this is probably the nearest we can get to the experience of being. Light or love. Just the vibration. Blue light. remember your belly. Your heart. Allow the world just to move easily within you. Rising. Each moment. We just have a short break, so just have a bit of a stretch and whatever you need to do. So just six or seven minutes, yeah. Okay, sorry about that, guys. We'll just finish off this session just by doing a simple meditation together. So get yourself comfortable again. Just find that. All right. Okay, Perdita. Can you ring the bell when it's time to finish?
I can, yes.
I don't know what time we've got. Fine. Fine. How long we've got left?
Just 15 minutes.
Okay. So just ring the bell and we've finished. And so just relax your face. We're just going to do a very simple meditation, just to help us find the heart as a center. So we're just going to imagine breathing in through the back of the heart and out through the front of the heart. In through the front of the heart and out through the back of the heart, in through the back of the heart, out through the front, in through the front. Out through the back. Try and make the breath nice and slow. It's just a simple way of trying to stay a bit more centered in the heart area. So don't force anything, so just a light or playful imagining. Breathing in through the back, out through the front, in through the front, out through the back. Imagine you're breathing the whole world through your heart, whatever that means. Okay, so we'll be leaving it there for this morning, and hopefully see you later.